want to grow our own, to come back to Fairfax and be a part of the community. We can't keep expecting everybody to just suddenly come here to Washington and become teachers. We have people who want to come back. And 4 years later, you know those people. You're back with the teachers who taught you. And now you're a part of that community in a completely different way. It's worked across the country. We started about 2 years ago, and we're ramping it up more and more. And we're finding that pool of teachers is more diverse. More men, more Asian teachers, of which we're still working on, more Latino teachers, which we're still working on, and strong numbers of both white students and African American, who we actually do recruit pretty well. But we still, again, we need quality teachers across the board. The other thing in the budget this year, TAM, which is our talent and acquisition management, which is really our recruitment. We're adding positions, over $1 million, I think it's $2 million, to that office to have them recruit more, to be able to get out more and go to colleges where the teachers are going and grabbing them early and saying, you need to come to Fairfax. Mm-hmm. We've been doing several Back to Fairfax initiatives too, where we go to alum and try to say, it's time to come back here. Yes, it's great to live somewhere else, but honestly, when you start to look at all of the pieces and where, you know, the future is going to be, this is going to be one of, I mean, it's a world capital, right? Amazon has come, there are 2,000 jobs in and 23,000 more to go. And I wish I had the whole list, Volkswagen, Gerber, major international companies are continuing to come here, and we need to have the teaching force join them. So one of the things we need to do is we need to continue to weigh up the teacher's salary. I talked with Mr. Moon, a former board member, earlier this week. They were at an event with Mark Warner about really a federal call to really up teacher salary by $20,000, $30,000 for every teacher tomorrow. It's time for a game changer moment in education, to quit, to prevent the great resignation, and to get people's attention to the pandemic. A silver lining is our parents got to see teaching every day. It's a hard thing, right? And I know there were a few things that needed to be worked on, but there was a lot of amazing teaching, like, oh my God, that is what that person does. And we need to continue to do it. So we're reorganizing TAM and adding additional staff, upping our salary, and really continuing to double down on this grow your own program.
And I would like to say, if I may, that because our teachers usually, except for the junior ROTC teachers, because the other teachers are not national security, they're still though on the front line because of potential pandemics, even in the future, even if this one starting to improve. So it's very important that they're paid to that level, I believe, as well, much more.
Absolutely.
So I support your decision.
Well, thank you. And we're trying to do more to look at, what are the other things. We're doing a relook at all of our healthcare plans and benefits right now to see if there's more things we can do there. Some school districts are talking about adding things like pet insurance for teachers. I know it sounds crazy, but the next generation of young people want things like that added to the benefits portfolio.
We have wedding planning.
I know the school board learned as part of our employee assistance program, which is one of the most heavily used kinds of programs like that in the country, here in Fairfax. Yes, you can reach out and they can give you wedding assistance help. I think that's now about to get flooded based on our sharing it yesterday. But the bottom line is, we have a program that wraps around teachers when they need it. We do some low-cost loans. The thing we need to keep working on here is housing, right? We've got to work on low-cost housing for teachers and those first responders. I know Jeff McKay, the county chair for the Board of Supervisors, is continuing to look at putting a penny into the budget for affordable housing. And we need to keep looking at every possibility around affordable housing solutions too. So those are some of the ideas. Word of mouth matters as well. You know, students who become teachers and getting their story out, and we're trying to do more of that.
And going off what you said about expanding TAM, is that?
TAM.
Yeah.
Town and Acquisition Management. Sorry for the
acronym. Good. And so. Do you think it's possible if, to create like a student committee, I guess, in a school, to be part of, to add, you know, student voices to be a part of gaining new teachers? Because I do know that there, I'm assuming that there's an interview part of gaining teachers, you know? And so I think it would be cool, because I was watching YouTube and then I saw this kid, they were like, oh, we have this at our school. It's, oh, it's somewhere in California. And then I was like, oh, I think it would be cool to, if we.
Well, why don't you send me, I'll give you my email and send me this idea. Look, adults want to know, this is a way to have our students directly communicate with adults in the world. We want you, we want great teachers. And here's the trick, if you've never, I was a career switcher. The first time I walked in a classroom, I was hooked. I knew that first day, it was an adopt-a-school business program with Bell Atlantic, which is Verizon now. I knew I wanted to leave. I was hooked 1 hour, I went one day a week. And it was a feel like to be in a classroom with students, but I'd never been back in. I was 25, had been 7 years out. To be back in with high school students was like, I'm like, am I gonna be paid to do this? Like, this is so fun, right? So, but you move on through things in the world, and how do you have a chance? We've gotta create more chances for adults to get back in, either early on, and you know, I leave for college and I know I wanna do it, but we've gotta leave room too for people who wanna go off and do something else for a little bit and then come back in and say, this is good too. So send me this information. I'll give you my email here in a minute. I'll follow up.
And because I want the best here as well, and Langley High School, my kids are grown, but they were so wonderful to my kids and I. We homeschooled most of the time because of high IQ, there was, if the social difference was just too great between the grade level and the age, but they let us go to the sporting events there. So we would go to the games, and I still cherish the memories to this day. My suggestion with the hiring is look at the IQs of the people as well when you interview them, because I think we want the best here.
We do a lot. We do a lot with resumes. We have an inside interview process. We do panels, and we are looking at additional things that we can do. I will say nationally, those who've studied this issue have looked at SAT scores for teachers from the 1960s and 70s to now, and that the percentage, the percentile is lower than it was a generation ago. Part of that, though, right, is the flip side, that the world for women in the workplace has expanded leaps and bounds, and a generation ago, teaching and nursing were two of the largest pipelines. So we have more competition now, and we've got to grab more market share from both men and women. One other quick thing on this, and I promise, let's go to some other questions. Virginia, and I got to find the latest data, but as of about 5 to 7 years ago, when I last dug in, we're one of the bottom five states for male participation in Virginia, in state public education. Bottom five.
Why do you think that is? Any idea?
Salary is definitely number.
Right.
And salary in Virginia is masked. If you took Northern Virginia out of whatever, teacher salary in Virginia is in the bottom five states, like near Mississippi. And I'm not dissing Mississippi, I'm just being, it's atrocious. And even here, when you really take this salary and then factor in the cost of living, it's not, people up here go, wow, you're just making tons of money. Well, wait a second, here's the rent for a one bedroom, right? So that's off a little bit. But Virginia is, the state right now has gobs of additional money, and it needs to be going to K-12 education. The governor, including the new governor, has talked about teacher pay and 5% a year in the budget. It's still not enough. We've got to have a game-changing moment. It's got to be 10, 15. Remember, we're the 11th richest state, and we're down at like 28 ranked for overall teacher salary, and it's already inflated because of us. So it's got to come up. Let's see if another student, and then we can go to some parents too.
I'm Melania, and I would say I do have some concerns regarding the school calendar. I think for one, starting before Labor Day is problematic to me, because with the start date this year, it conflicts with our like vacation. It's like a big event we go to, and it's really important for my family, like other friends, family friends we know. And I would also say that it's very hot when we start. Like, temperature-wise, it's hot. There are times I've walked home, because I walk home from school, and it'll be like almost 90 degrees, and it gets very hot and uncomfortable walking home in such heat. And I would suggest that, like, going back to after Labor Day also start, because a lot of the workers, I know there's some that work summer jobs, and it's just easy to keep, I think, like, amusement parks open. I think with the King's Dominion waiver,
right,
also, it's, like, important to them to have the employees to make sure that they can have the business to keep the amusements open for tourist attractions. And I think another thing is with regarding this, like, obviously spring break's not co-aligning with Easter this year, and one thing I noticed is that you guys try to include a more religious observance days, and Easter falls on the 17th, and I know for some Christians, the 15th is an important holiday, Good Friday, and there's, like, no religious observance for that, so I wonder why some holidays are not observed, religious holidays are not observed, but others are observed as more important. So that's my
no. Those are two great questions. Let me take the first one first, and then I'll do the second one. So you mentioned King's Dominion. This was actually a whole thing. I don't know how much you followed it, but go back. Are you a senior?
A senior?
No.
I'm a freshman.
A freshman. Well, in government class, it'll be interesting because we had this law called the King's Dominion Law that prevented any schools from opening on Labor Day. And the past governor, Northam, cut a deal and said you could open if you take the Friday and Monday for Labor Day as holidays, so that everybody would still go to Virginia Beach and King's Dominion and Busch Gardens, where I used to work when I was a teenager. So I get it. Here's the truth. We did the survey, including this year. It's about 50-50. The tilt, and I'm just being real, the staff tilt to wanting the weeks before Labor Day back earlier, and the parents want it to happen after Labor Day. And it's slightly 50-50 one way, slightly 50-50 the other. So it's truly with two big stakeholders right down the middle. Yeah.
Can grandparents vote?
I'm talking on the survey we had. A couple of things just in this whole thing to balance. And I'm gonna give you a potential solution. So I'm gonna give you a little bit more, and then I'm gonna give you a solution. Our AP and IP exams are set universally, and they're in May, and they're more aligned to college. So we were opening later than everybody else and trying to jam, and student stress, even before the pandemic, was a huge issue, trying to jam all these classes in on time, and then we had a month afterward, and students were like, what's going on? So we have tried to move off by being able to start earlier and get more instruction in. Now, the calendar did add some days in, and it's sort of kind of made it almost a wash, but one of the things in doing this calendar that we're starting to look at, this, the Commonwealth of Virginia allows 180 days or 990 hours. The board, after doing this calendar this year, did a follow-on motion and asked for the next superintendent to bring back a calendar that looks at 990. 990 would allow us to shrink the number of actual days in the calendar and still meet the state requirement. So we might be able to shrink on the first end and start closer to Labor Day, or shrink on the back end and end earlier in June. But we've never, for 45 years, or really, I don't know, 60 years in Fairfax, we've always done a 180-day calendar. Loudoun is doing a 170-day calendar next year. Now, they're going to have less snow days. The only negative is if you go too trimmy and you have a bad snow event, and no one really, I don't know, is here anymore. It was my second year as a teacher. Fourth quarter, we extended the school day by 30, 45 minutes. Does anybody remember that? I was a brand new teacher, and it was like, it's almost, pandemic is still number one, but that frankly came in pretty much a close second.
Tell your kids you have three more days of school after they have been told what the last day of school was.
I was an intern, and I had to announce to students, hey, you'll be staying with me another 45 minutes at the end of the day between, and this was like April, between now and June. I'm sure you're going to be really focused. So that's the only, if you trim too much and we have a bad weather, it's on you. if you cross the 990 threshold. So that's one of the things we'll just have to think about.
Well, DC schools just added days after their final day of school.
Yeah, and that's a no-go in my end. So it's a balance on that one. The other one was, can you just remind me again?
Good Friday.
So next year, our spring breaks have gone back in alignment with all the other divisions. And so this was a one-year thing where we looked at it differently. The calendar that we have next year, I believe, takes care of that issue.
And we'll just put it up for the economic impact that she was talking about starting after Labor Day. And it's not so much even what's felt here. We go up all the time up to, you know, Jersey Shore, some of the smaller towns, and the hotel owners, the mom and pop ones, are like the Virginia schools, because they typically during those weeks we get tons of people from Virginia. They were crying. It is killing us. They're like our business. So to your point, having, you know, wealth and affluence, whatever, to be able to spread in that. And she's like, there's also families that you guys support, and having parents be able to support their families by working as opposed to a handout is also unbelievable in terms of what it does for self-esteem, morale, and everything. So I know, like, kind of the whole, all those schools up in New Jersey, for example, start after Labor Day for those reasons. But just also understand sometimes choices made here.
I understand.
Consequences, and then, you know.
You know, one of the things when we were even doing the calendar last year in the middle of the pandemic, you know, we were getting emails from India. It was in the news in India, Diwali not included. I'm just saying, this is a district that makes news based on what it does, whatever it does. So I do appreciate that. I think the 990 is a way, ultimately, because some board members are worried about the calendar getting too expansive. How can you add some of these cultural, religious observances and maybe even be able to shrink the calendar a little bit more? There's more flexibility that we've never pursued. We just have to be prepared. This is the only thing. We just have to be prepared. And right now, even the calendar I have next year, I think still gives us 10 snow days, 10, maybe 12. How much are we willing as a community to shrink and just be prepared for if you've got that Jersey Shore place in June and I add 4 more days? Well, I won't be advising you. I'd be advising you. Elaine will be calling me going, what did you tell the superintendent? But it's got to be, we got to figure out what that point is. And maybe it's 3 or 4 days down, it's a week off. I don't know if we go all the way and take 2 whole weeks out of the calendar to go 990, and then we have no snow days left. That's something I think we have to think about. We've always had more than, except for 1 or 2 wild years, and when it did, it was a jolt. So.
Speaking of religious holidays, that's me with Senator Tim Kaine. He was our governor and he ran for vice president of the USA. I went to church with him a lot in Roanoke, Virginia, the Catholic Church there. And so speaking about religion, I happen to know a lot about the reason governmentally, Virginia's history and the USA, why Christ-centered holidays and also Jewish, so Judeo-Christian holidays, have been a focus with the days that we get off. It really was part of our founding in our Constitution of the United States and Virginia's Constitution, the Bible, the Old and New Testament. The Old Testament being some Jewish people only believe in the Old Testament, and then Christ-centered people, Christian and Catholic, believe in both Old Testament and New Testament. So that's where that comes from.
And one of the things, too, that we did on the calendar.
I like it.
And one of the things we did on the calendar, we pulled all the absence data. So some of our highest absence data now are the 2 Eid festivals for the Islamic faith. And I mean, huge numbers of students out on those days. We now have the largest, the Jewish Greater Washington Jewish Community, JRC. We are now the largest Jewish population in the DMV area, not Montgomery County. Fairfax County. So things have changed. Like traditionally over the years, Montgomery County's done High Holy Days for decades. Actually, the population has shifted. Diwali, we have 4 elementary schools. 4 elementary schools that are now majority Indian American in Fairfax County. So it's changed in ways we don't even have fully recognized. And so we're trying to be more reflective about that. But again, these are big things, and it's a change, and well, we've always done it this way, and trying to find the right balance. I do hear your point, and I think we are going to look to shrink the calendar in the years ahead, going to 990 instead of the 180.
Cut down on the winter breaks.
Yeah.
A lot of parents work. Oh, my kids would sit home even younger, you know, without childcare.
This was the other wild card, too, that the board even looked at. The winter break among our staff, this one was not as high on parents, but right. on our staff, it was their number one, please keep the winter break. Mm-hmm. But for many, many years, we did have a shorter winter break, and that's another place we could go to.
I would say as a parent, I loved it when we moved to the longer winter break.
Look at this. This
was, can't please everyone.
Just, this is a group of 40 people.
This was the world of a pandemic. Let's find out. Let's do a survey about this or that. Or on any topic. Oh, Dr. Brabrand, here's the results. It's come back. So what's your decision? Oh, okay. That's everything split.
50-50.
That's wonderful. But no, that is a place. And for many years,
winter break.
Many years, we did do a shorter winter break. I think the board, one of the things, honestly, the board said is, Dr. Brabrand, we don't want to lock this in over 3 or 4 years. Let's do this calendar next year, but we still want to get community engagement, follow a process. Right. So there could still be tweaks moving forward, but we did make a shift, and in some ways, I think we made a more permanent shift to try to look at how we can be inclusive to all of the needs that have been talked about, and I think the board will keep doing that moving forward. Who else might have a question who hasn't had a chance to ask one? Yes?
We were a military family. We moved all over the place. The best school experience my kids ever had was all-round school. And even though we had 7 weeks of summer, there was an October break. There was time to have, and schools were open with programs for working parents to keep everybody who could involved. That's not an opportunity here, is what I've been told over and over.
Well, I want you to know, if you Google
from the school.
The kids have to bring in the crops around here.
If you Google my career, I went to a smaller district and I proposed, basically. It had 1 year round school and I wanted to move the whole system there. Headlines, oh my God, right? And I did move during my tenure there to create what I would call a fall break. And it lasted as long as I was there, and when I was gone, that guy left, we'll go back to traditional. It's a hard pull. Right. We had them here too in Fairfax, just in a few places, Timberlane, but we had about 10 others. It grew, and then in the recession, and I'm just gonna be candid, and having been here 30 years, I got the history. Dr. Zulago too, we were on cabinet, Dr. Right. Dale was superintendent. He pulled a research study of the 16 schools that went year-round. 8 outperformed the county. 8 underperformed the county. It was $15 million. He had to cut $200 million. Remember the Great Recession before the stimulus came. And
they were
remember,
gone.
We sat around a table and went, oh my God, $15 million, half and half. We ended up cutting it. I still think it's a place. Richmond City proposed it. It didn't get a vote this year. Hopewell, I know the superintendent well there, has gone to it. It certainly helps kids that have been mobility, and of course our military families face that in huge ways, and many of our economically disadvantaged kids. The state had a JLARC study, a Joint Legislative Audit Research Committee that advises the state. They said it wasn't a massive game changer for all students, but it was for economically disadvantaged students of color and students with some mobility. Right. They gave a little bit of money to study a calendar, but they've never given massive dollars to adopt it. And it does cost more because you need to have teachers during that intermission, if you will, for the kids that stay while the other folks go. So I won't rule it out again. I think there's still a place. But that's part of the reform work that's got to be. The ARRA money, everybody goes, oh, you got all this money. It's one time. It's gone in another year.
Right.
We've got to have that flow moving forward to be able to do. And we're doing right now. Summer school is going to be 2-3 times bigger than it's ever been in previous years. All that money got cut 15 years ago for summer school. So we've got to figure out a way that we can provide that back. Sir?
Well, Wendy's question segues into one I had in mind, which is, I respect vacations and so on, but my biggest concern is what's best for the learning modality, what's best for learning. For example, is 180 days better than the 900 whatever hours? You guys are PhDs, so Elaine, what?
You wanna take that one, Dr.
Yeah,
Spoiler?
What's the science?
I was just going to, because it is related to the question that Christina had a few minutes ago. The things that we are finding in education in terms of what is what really makes a difference in the classroom. Remember what the superintendent said, a highly, highly qualified teacher. Mm-hmm. That means if you're hiring a physics teacher, a very strong physics, chemistry teacher, extremely well prepared, who has a, not just a high IQ, but also a high, high EQ. Somebody that can, I mean, I visit classrooms every single day. And when I go into a classroom, whether it's Langley, McLean, I supervise Thomas Jefferson. And when I see a teacher who has very, very strong relationships with the kids and knows the content, that classroom, I mean, you don't have to worry about the scores.
And well, class size, right?
Not so much class size, but really, no, when you see a classroom...
High IQ will yield a high EQ automatically.
Not necessarily. No. What I have seen, and I every year, Scott knows this, I do visit at least close to 700 classrooms.
Wow.
I do. And I have been doing this for the last 13, 14 years. So I have seen that, right? You believe me, right? What I have seen is that in those classrooms where you have a strong English teacher, at the elementary level, if you have a very caring, top reading and math teacher, those kids fly through the roof. Where the kid, because the kids are highly engaged, the teacher knows the content, the pedagogy. So that's what the interest is to retain. In order to retain those teachers, they want to have a welcoming environment. Salary matters for the teachers.
Okay, so just a quick follow-up on that. This is really interesting. If you could only do one, hire more teachers to lower classroom size, or pay more to get better quality teachers, to give really good quality people the affordability to be a teacher,
right.
Which one's better?
It's a balance. I taught chemistry for for 15 years, and physics. And there is a point where you don't want to have in a science lab more than probably 30 kids, because then it becomes unmanageable. A high school teacher sees 150 kids every day, right? Or every other day. So it's that fine balance between a reasonable size and a top quality teacher, highly prepared teacher.
And my take is very similar to Fabio's. My lean is you got to pay to have the top quality teacher. Class size research is most powerful at the very earliest grades. That's where it can be a game changer. Your kids still learn to read or do
that.
What's that?
I always agree with that.
It's game changing. And in Virginia, there is some state money for K-3 class size initiative. Our poorest schools will get additional money. One of the things we did too with Title I, we changed the formula distribution so our highest need schools got that lower class size.
Right.
What's tough is, and I'm just being real, right, class size remains, even after 100 years of education, extremely politically popular. It's popular to have a small, but you're in a small class with a mediocre teacher, it's better to be in that class where it's a little more jammed. Now, I'm with Fabio, more than 30 kids in a science class with labs, now you're making it unsafe.
Right.
You know, you go to college and you got 300 kids and a whatever course thing.
But at the, excuse me, Dr. Brennan, but at the elementary level, just to answer your question, if you have a teacher with 16 kids, but the teacher is not highly prepared, highly qualified, or do you have a teacher who is highly prepared, highly qualified, strong relationships with 20, 22 kids, I'll take that teacher.
Yeah, but wait, hold on. None of our elementary schools in McLean have 20 or 21 kids.
No,
average.
You're up higher.
Yeah. Right.
So frame it better, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
The one thing we've done, two things I want you to know. We have in our staffing reserve special unique needs. First of all, we have a class size cap formula. We've got, I'd say it's 15 $7 to $15 million. If and a lot of them are in McLean Lane. If they go over the number, we give the school an additional teacher, and it is in the code. It's I think it's pegged at 29. I have to go back and look. I know it's still high. Oh God, I got to get to 30 to get it. But you do get it, and it's automatic.
One year at Spring Hill, it sorted out where we were at 21. Oh. We have five classes at that grade level, 21 each. It was magical compared to 30.
So Dr. Garza added it in during her budget. Even though she was having to cut budget, she added in. I never took it away. And it's mostly for McLean and Langley schools.
That has helped a lot.
If you study the $15 million, where it goes to your schools. Hmm. That was a way to take care of that issue there. And then I used Title I money, and I used that to deal with the schools with the higher needs. Again, sort of that balancing act. I want to mention one other thing and then let Elaine say this. Something I'm working on that teachers want right now at elementary big time, and I'm working on trying to have a plan. It's not quite done yet. They want planning time. And they want planning time equal to the number of minutes at middle and high, where they have, in a traditional middle and high school, there's 7 periods, and 2 of those periods the teachers are off. In elementary, there's no such thing. There's no, you know, there's no downtime. So we're looking at a plan where we would hire monitors to provide, really recess monitors, for those monitors to help the kids go out of recess, and that's when the teachers get the time to breathe and they can get the same amount of time as middle and high. Nice. It may mean tweaking a little bit of some of the calendar that I've looked at, and we're not there yet, but we are looking at something which elementary teachers have asked for this division for decades. Give us that planning time, especially after the Monday early closing left.
Yes,
they never got the same time back. I'd like to solve that before I walk out the door. I believe I have a solution, and I'll be bringing it to the board in April that I think I can pay for with just some slight tweaks that don't mean another nickel from the Board of Supervisors. So stay tuned. And I'm sorry, Elaine.
I just found out you were all at the PTSA meeting at Langley this morning talking about how over the last couple of years we've tried to hold the number of teachers, even though we have seen some declining enrollments with COVID. But my impression is as we move into this next year, we're not going
to
do that.
We are going to have to make enrollment adjustments based on our formula. But I did, and I don't think I've even announced this yet, but this is just how it goes, and Elaine, I guess, can go back. Principals asked for some flexibility around ESSER for full-time positions for next year.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to make it unlimited, but we are going to let a school get up to one full-time, like, oh my God, I'm going to lose a teacher. My own numbers went down. That's the formula. But if you've got that ESSER money, some will have carryover, and we'll have another plot of ESSER money. I can buy that teacher. It's 1 year only.
That's good.
But that saves a teacher that might have been walking out your school's door that you want to keep in your school. And they were jumping up and down today. It could be a counselor, it could be a reading teacher.
It could be a language, teacher. It could be science.
Well, we did try to focus for the ESSER money. It could be anybody, but for using their ESSER money, we're really looking at English, mathematics, and school counselor, doubling down on what the federal government sort of guidelines were. But the bottom line is schools that maybe, if you're losing enrollment at a high school, you're losing an English or math teacher, and you can buy that back for 1 year. And so we think that's going to take the edge off a little bit. By the way, and this is just one of those things to just help reset the narrative, we did lose some kids. We lost some kids, maybe 9,000. But let me give you a couple of numbers. We now almost have 2,000 kids back since the beginning of the year. The numbers have gone up every month since we opened. We have about 2,000 to 3,000 homeschool kids beyond our normal homeschool. They're sitting in the home right now. Many are calling the principals, oh, masks are optional now, I'm back. Or I'm going to come back at the next quarter. Or you know what, I am going to register and come back next year. I took 2 years off. I believe those numbers, you know, no one has the crystal ball. We've never been through it. But I can just tell you this. Every month, our numbers have continued to go up by hundreds of families re-enrolling. We're sitting on 2,000 to 3,000 more beyond the normal who've been homeschooled, which means they're still right here in Fairfax. I honestly believe those numbers are going to come back. Will we get all the people back that we projected? Probably not. Will we close that gap? Yes. We're already almost 2,000 in for this year, and I think we've got a couple more thousand that we could have for next year. We'll just have to see. Yes, ma'am.
Just related to that, so when we look at the budget for next year, there's been consideration made for that reduction in
yes.
enrollment. So obviously, we'll have to rearrange that budget a bit to get to if we have increased enrollment. So.
Right. One of the things I did in the budget, and Elaine knows and the board knows, I expanded that staffing reserve I mentioned. I expanded it by 50 positions, right? So we've got more this time. If the numbers come out, I've got cushion to go back and help the school to go, oh, wait a second. We had to lose two, but your numbers are coming in. Oh, you're going to get that back. And I just announced today, ESSER flexibility, I'm going to let you, you're losing that teacher. You can keep that teacher for one more year using ESSER funds. And then maybe by the end of next year, that enrollment's back.
Right.
And that teacher stays.
So you feel like you have plenty of budget to...
I think we've given the principals every tool we can. And I've got to be able to face... Remember, I got to face the board of supervisors and go, Scott, your enrollment went down. You're asking for more money. Hold it, hold it, hold it.
Yeah.
I took the enrollment adjustment following our formula. There's no... I'm transparent. I'm not playing games. I did put a bunch of this money for teacher salary, but you're doing the same thing. The county wage in ours is off by 0.1%. Their COLA is 4.01, ours is 4. I've told the school board, we're not gonna quibble over 0.1%. The county executive has fully funded it, and I am very hopeful that we'll have for my five-year tenure, 3 of the 5 years, except for the 2 pandemic years, we will have gotten a fully funded budget request. Everything we ask for, we'll get. I'm very, very hopeful that will happen this year. Now, I know some are worried about tax, but the county executive put unallocated funds so that you can lower the tax rate this year. And I do expect the tax rate to be lowered. I also, frankly, I expect the school funding request to remain fully funded. But I'll have to leave that to Elaine and her colleagues working with our board of supervisors, but we've had a great relationship, and I think we'll continue to have it as the budget season wraps up this spring. We'll know for sure in May when the, late April when the board of supervisors approves their budget, and then the school board will approve it about 2 weeks later in May.
Good to know that we have a
cushion.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Couple things surrounding so-called social emotional learning. One is that I know a lot of kids like totally lost motivation during the pandemic. And while it's been great being back at school socially, and actually I had a teacher tell me this, that she's finding a lot of apathy among the kids. And I see it in my own kids. It's like, just trying to get that motivation back for the academic work. And I don't know what you're doing in that area. And then my other one actually has to do with the interactions. And one of my kids who's very social said that, like, you know, she's at lunch and, like, you know, she's talking with someone and they're just on their phone. And then I read that a lot of kids, like, don't know how to interact anymore, or, like, how do you do small talk and, you know,
yeah,
get to know each other again. And so I wondered.
So one of the things, I always try to want to put it down. It's not as simple as saying this. We've got to get kids off their phones. Mm-hmm. We've got to get, in the pandemic, but all of us were on our phones. Let's just be real, on our computers. Mm-hmm. You know, the board actually came up with the work session a little bit. I gave guidelines pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. I created tighter phone guidelines around phones in schools, and I didn't make it policy. The school board didn't take a vote. It was, I sent out a letter working with the PTAs a few weeks before school, and I'm gonna really have to look at dusting that off and say to kids next year, you know what, your phone is gonna be much more limited. I'm not saying take it away, but tell them don't start rumors, but kind of, I think we need to consider that suggestion.
Right.
We've got to get off the phone. You've got to get reconnected. Remember, that was the lifeline for folks. It was the lifeline for folks for 2 years. So it's trying to, you know, you were stuck in traffic and idle, and now you're trying to get back to the speed limit. And it's just like a car, right? It's the law of physics, even for human beings. 2 years in a set of routine, and now trying to get back to normal, and it's just not going to happen. It's everybody in this inching out. Like, you know, just talking about this, it, the last time I was here, it was back to the whatever. I'm like, oh my God, Janie, are we gonna have enough room? I couldn't find a place to park. People will come back in time, kids will come back. One of the things is to more outside, right? More outside, which we pushed all year. We've done outdoor learning, we put tents up. But I'm just saying, encouraging your kids, planning stuff this summer to be out. The world's reopening. It is, D.C. is reopening. I was talking to somebody here about going back to go into D.C. I don't know if you have been. I didn't go into D.C. for 2 years. I just went in 3 weeks ago with childhood friends from high school who we all reunited. I'm like, oh my God, D.C. is so much fun. Right? My boys. And I'm ashamed to say this, they graduated last year. I'm not ashamed to say they graduated, but for prom, we ended up, my wife and I, and they went with a bunch of other couples, like 20, and they were all thinking about driving to D.C. My wife's like, oh, we can't do that, and you're the superintendent, and it'll be on your hands if something happens. So we got a limo, and they went into D.C., but the best memory is they went to the Lincoln Memorial, and they took pictures of couples, you know, by the... That whole, the view of the Lincoln and the reflecting pool. And that's like one of my wife's now favorite memories of just, we have a whole community here that we've got to put our kids back in that is fascinating and enriching with culture, sports, museums, right. And just get off the phone. Like, you've seen enough on the phone, there's nothing new there. And TikTok, no, has nothing on the Smithsonian or the Sackler or, I mean, that's just the reality. And I know as an adult, I'm having to, tonight is one of the first times, and it's exciting to be back. I don't want to sit at home, and sometimes, mostly I'm still answering board emails, like the board member that just texted me now. Like, where are you?
Like, oh, yeah, just don't pay attention.
So I'm sorry for having that. And I even have to go and take a call at 8:30, but I think that's what I do. It's just the life, and it's a lifestyle. But your kids had a lifestyle that was a digital lifestyle, and it's just like too much of that is just not good for you.
It's not necessarily the school's responsibility, but the kids are stunted, and it's bad enough in high school. But one thing the school might consider and embrace, I know in Chicago they do this and some other places, there's a campaign called Wait Till 8th for smartphones. To keep them out of the hands of, you know, elementary and early middle.
Interesting.
Yeah, wait till 8th.
It's not going to happen here.
No, my kids didn't get them till 8th grade.
Yeah, right. And you might want to Google it and see if there's something there.
Especially if our PTAs would be willing to partner with us. The parental pressure.
Let me write this down.
Well, yeah.
I like your kids to be able to call 911 now.
Yeah, that's... That'll be the balance. That's always been what the balance was.
You give them a flip phone, a track phone for that. But,
yeah.
You know.
Even the guidance we gave at elementary prior to the pandemic, I don't know that we outlawed it. We did make it an emergency. It couldn't just be out and being used. It only could be used with adult direction or supervision. But I do think the culture here, honestly, compared to other places, is young, young, young. I mean, they're kindergartners. Hold up, I'm going to take a call from mom. And we gotta work on that a little bit. But the other is a campaign, and maybe the schools can do it. To be honest, we're still struggling a little bit, and it's happening, so I don't want to be critical. You know, I've had board members asking Kennedy Center. We've been having to twist the Kennedy Center and some other. D.C. is starting, like, we need you to reopen. We've been doing field trips. Cappies will be in person for our theater program. We'll be back in person for the first time in 2 years. We're super excited. And I don't know if you've ever seen that, but for our drama kids, it's in the Kennedy Center, your front row, it's black tie. It's nothing like it in Fairfax County, anywhere else in the world. We've got to create those experiences all over again. And get kids like, yeah, this is why you want to do these things and not sit at home. But we're coming out of it. And to be honest, until 3 months ago, right, all of our elementary parents didn't have access to a vaccine for their kids. So this really is the chance to start pushing. As I said, I announced to our elementary principals today, everything is back on for the spring, the promotion ceremonies, the dances, the fun. And we think that's going to help reopen. And our Our experience from high school this year, record turnout for dances, record turnout for sporting events, but it's going to still take some time. The social emotional is real. And the reality is kids actually are probably, they're better than we think they might have been, but there's still significant numbers of kids that do have that apathy, right? There was apathy before the pandemic, and how do we reconnect? And I just think it's going to take some time, and maybe we need to get some more good ideas about how we can make it even better.
I think, I totally agree with what you're saying. The phone is an excuse to not talk because it's awkward, you know? Like, online was, you know, you have a shield, kind of, you know? You have a screen, you know? But, and then going back in person, it's more like, ooh, now I have to actually talk to this person. But I think what might help in the classroom is, more engaging lessons. I do understand that teachers, it's a lot of work for teachers to, you know, teach a whole classroom, right? And then multiple classrooms on top of that. So it's easy to resort to, you know, presentations or lectures, right? And obviously you can't totally avoid lectures, right? But I think something like, I do know that, you know, my teachers have done PBL, project-based learning.
Yes.
That's been a lot more interesting, yes. Right? And I think on top of that, doing more like discussion based, like something like this. This is fun, right? I'm learning a lot.
Yep.
And there's
Socratic
no lecture,
seminar in a way.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
So that's the kind of thing that I enjoy, right? You know, and it's really popular among us students too.
We just shared with the school board one of the things we were doing. All of our portrait of a graduate presentations of learning. Oakton High School was doing it before the pandemic. Every kid had to complete one, and you gave basically the community came in at night, and every senior had to do a project. It was a round of passion and interest, and then you presented almost like you were at a symposium. Amazing. Every kid. And that's what we're trying to get to and get back to. We were starting it, and it's the truth. 1 week before we shut down, I was in the Richmond area with a few folks from Fairfax, some principals, in a state network about, oh, this is so exciting. We're going to really go beyond. And then, boom, right? A 2-year pause. And board members just said, just this week, this was the most normal board meeting we just had. We went back to our strategic plan. We talked about the areas we need to refine it. And they were about to refine, this new board was about to refine the strategic plan with me, really, 1 week, 2 weeks before the pandemic shut us down. And then, for the last 2 years, it's been all operations. I'm just being honest. It's been all operations. It's been all health, all safety, all the time. And we've got to pivot back rapidly. And we are. We are rapidly pivoting back. But I think it is continuing to tell kids it's okay to put the shield down. Yeah. And it's far more exciting. We're in an enriching system and world that still beats the phone.
Piggyback on Christina's question. I'm just wondering how often the FCPS update the curriculum,
yep.
Or how advanced are we on now, and how the teacher is going to follow up the current curriculum compared to other county or compared to other neighboring countries.
So we do a lot of curriculum updates. First of all, we do summer curriculum development projects with our teachers to come and beef up the curriculum every year. Teachers gobble up for that to do it. They love to do it. So we continually do it. We did make adjustments for our curriculum, all of our curriculum this year, with a focus on making sure we got some foundational skills to check back because of last year and to streamline some things that we spent a little bit longer on in the past, like, do we need to do that? So that we got, in a sense, we hit some of the higher points of the curriculum. I don't have Dr. Presidio with me tonight, but we reviewed all that work. And we did streamline some of the curriculum. We'll tweak it again next year because I think we're going to be, I really am hopeful that the COVID is removed from any of our vocabulary this year. And we'll just be 100% focused on instruction, good instruction, good curriculum, and good teaching. One of the things, just back on the social emotional, all of our elementary schools had morning meeting. And then all of our middle and high schools had an advisory period to work on talking and doing any engaging lessons. Now, our students are still telling us, some of the lessons. And I just met with a young man in his 20s. I don't know how he found me, but he did. I took a 30-minute call. He has this Socratic artificial intelligence software that he's sold now to several big-time colleges about how to promote deeper thinking. And the computer, you ask a question, and based on the question, the computer tells you how curious you are, how deep a thinker you are, and it reports the results to the professor. Again, I don't want to plug for him yet. I don't know. I'm sending it to Sloan Fabio.
We'll see.
But how can technology actually start to push you back to go deeper instead of just surfing, right, or looking at something entertaining? How does it push you to think? And then it gives you feedback. Ooh, you didn't think that much. That was kind of a basic question. Think more. I know, but and getting to dialogue, and then students for grades in these colleges are having to go on into the discussion and engage their classmates. They're judged not by just the question they ask, but by the remark to the question, and the software gives the professor's feedback. I know, this is the next world, and they like that better than just multiple choice tests.
Right.
And the computer helps them do it, like to read 5,000 essays and back and forth, but the computer is actually assessing the quality of your thought. It's a little scary. I don't know. Like, do I want it? You know? He's at UVA and VCU right now, so I mean, anybody there, tell me. And he says that they're using it now in philosophy classes, philosophy class, some psychology classes. So I don't know. This is just, that's hot off the press.
You
I'm not really
making for some things. I've programmed autopilot for rockets at Cape Canaveral Space Center, Kennedy Space Center, the Air Force Base there in Florida. I do want to say I do support the smaller classrooms because it is factual. Anyone with half a brain can do the math. If you have less children for a specific same amount of time in the classroom, if each child needs to ask a question and needs personal attention with an answer to that question, you're going to have more time per child.
Yep.
Mathematically to answer their questions.
Absolutely.
So they're going to be able to learn more.
And I do want to go back to one thing, and I've got to leave in 10 minutes, so maybe I'll take one more question just so that I can...
Do we need a picture of you?
Step out, we can do a picture. Yes. We are going to announce very shortly, in a matter of days, universal, every kid don't have to pay a nickel access to personal tutoring. We're very excited about that. I think it's going to be an additional game changer. Some of our teachers were begging for having tutoring, and they're tired, right? This is a national group who can provide it for all 180,000 kids. We don't expect all 180,000, but we made a strategic move. And we've got some people asking, but we made it universal. We didn't want hoops. Anyone who wants it for any amount that they want it, you're going to have it.
In person or online?
It's going to be online tutoring. I know that's the negative, but that gives us that national presence because we can get tutors from anywhere around the country to tutor your kid. And we'll have more information on it and more information from principals.
Is it a human tutoring?
Yes, it's human tutoring. It's not AI, don't
worry. That's a great question.
So, I know. I'm dating myself, 2001 Space Odyssey, how the computer that's not a good answer, you have an F. Well, listen, this was a great time, and I just want you to know how proud I am of all of you. I appreciate you coming out to be with us tonight. I know Fabio, Elaine, and I appreciate it. And there's no other place, you know, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home. There's no place like Fairfax, folks. It is a ruby slipper place. It doesn't mean it's perfect. I'm sure Auntie M yelled at Dorothy a couple times. There were some discussions, maybe some plates flew. But it's still an amazing system. And the opportunities here for kids are still second to none. We've just got to make sure we take that opportunity, but get every kid, not just for opportunity, but get every kid to that success and outcome. And that's still the work we have to do. So. Thank you so much for being here tonight. I'll take one picture, Elaine, before I have to say.